Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to Top of the Morning on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. At the start of a new week, geopolitics are likely to dominate the headlines and likely market activity. Military strikes between Israel and Iran continued overnight without signs of obvious de-escalation. The G7 summit is occurring in Canada on Monday and Tuesday of this week. We do have the Fed's FOMC meeting taking place this week. So, Jason, a lot going on. So thank you for joining us to talk about these events, the potential market implications of them. And of course, we'll spend some time on positioning. By the way, of course, we're joined today by Jason Dreho, head of asset allocation for the Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office. Happy Monday morning, Jason, to you. Thank you for dropping by.
Good morning, Dan. Happy Monday. Good to be here in person again.
Absolutely. So it was an eventful weekend when you think about geopolitics, Jason. Let's begin with that. In the Middle East, we have been witnessing ongoing fighting between Israel and Iran. Of course, first and foremost, the human toll, very unfortunate to see, though, of course, we need to talk about the risks this perhaps poses to the economy and markets. So what are your thoughts as of this morning?
Well, it's always hard to put a probability on when there's military, political war events, like what's the likelihood of escalation or not escalation? And, you know, therefore, like how likely is this to become perhaps a regional war that is, occurs over an extended period of time, because at the moment there's not sort of obvious kind of off ramps in terms of how this could be de-escalated. Given that, it's hard to kind of quantify that probability. What the markets, investors will tend to do is then, instead focus on what is the economic impact of this happening, and that's of this disrupting, the U.S. economy, the global economy in some way. And realistically, there's two main channels. One is through just high oil prices, through disrupted, supply. And then the other is maybe like disrupted trade patterns, particularly through, the kind of through the Persian Gulf, but the Suez Canal, that part of the world. Like, that could disrupt trade. But primarily it's going to be higher oil prices. What we know of this, as of this morning, it's Monday morning, is that there doesn't seem to be much impact on actual oil output and exports. So oil prices have gone up from a low of around $60 a barrel up to close to 78, now down to about 75. So like a good 25% increase. But because there doesn't seem to be a disruption of supply, that increase right now and the price really reflects more of a risk premium that, supply could be, disrupted. The longer this goes on, just sort of, just obviously there's greater risk of something escalating. It's also, the longer it goes on, perhaps Iran in particular would be incentivized to do something where they have a blockade of the Strait of Hormuz, where to try and curtail oil shipping out. Things that would have caused oil prices to go higher, that would cause stress in the global economy, and therefore you'd have countries such as the U.S. want to lean on Israel to, let's look to de-escalate because this is starting to have a negative impact. We're not there yet. So that's kind of how things potentially could play out. Again, sticking more just with the economic argument, quantifying what would be the consequence. A rough kind of rule of thumb is that $10 increase in the price of oil, per barrel, would roughly translate into about a 4 basis point increase in inflation, all else equal. So in the environment where inflation is likely to go higher because of tariffs, that has been sort of moving in a positive direction so far this year. The 4 basis points in and of itself is not a game changer for kind of all the noise and other uncertainty kind of tariff related. But if there was an escalation that would cause the price of oil to go over $100 a barrel from where it was at 60, well, now we're talking, that's having a 20 basis points impact on inflation, which just further exacerbates kind of the trend in inflation if that materializes. And so that just kind of quantifies it. And then, of course, it has a negative impact on the U.S. economy if prices rise too much, more so for the consumer, even though the production side of the economy, because the U.S. is the biggest oil producer at this point in time, there is an offset there. If we leave that aside, the U.S. economy, the data we got last week shows that it is still holding up relatively well.
Right.
Things are slowing a little bit, the labor market, but nothing that would indicate a kind of real kind of falling off a cliff. So given all that, if you look at the price action from last Friday, it's consistent with what you sort of expected. It was a risk-off day. Equities sold off, credit spreads sold off. But the treasury yields actually rose. They kind of rose more. They kind of dialed back as the day went on. The U.S. dollar did strengthen a little bit, but not exactly a real kind of flight to safety bid for U.S. assets. And the dollar rallying will be consistent with that, but also a flight to safety going into U.S. treasuries, yields going lower, but in fact they went higher. And now what we're seeing on Monday morning is kind of a an unwinding, a fading perhaps of this trade. Equity futures are up. Yep. You've seen the dollar weaken. You know, the more beta, you know, high beta currencies are rallying. Treasury yields are rising again. Directionally, it looks like a risk-on environment. And so that's an interesting sort of, you know, dynamic, you know, consistent with the market saying to look through these, you know, Middle East events as being somewhat, you know, relatively insignificant from an economic perspective for the U.S. But the key thing that was interesting is the flight to safety did not necessarily occur for U.S. assets, you know, both on Friday and then certainly again this morning.
So, Jason, I will point out quickly that this, of course, a very fluid situation. We're recording around 9 a.m. Eastern on Monday morning for our listeners likely to tune in a bit later in the week. Though putting that aside for a few moments, do want to turn over to the G7 meeting, as mentioned, taking place this week, today, Monday, as well as Tuesday. Is this a risk event for the markets, whether that be a positive or negative?
It is a... maybe more of a question mark. You know, there's potential for either way. So on the positive side, there could be some announcements of, you know, frameworks of trade deals, you know, between the U.S. and Japan. There's been a lot of, you know, discussion and speculation if something could be announced. You know, this has been sort of an ongoing issue in the markets for about a month now, thinking there'd be something to announce with Japan. And that has not happened, but that would be sort of a positive outcome. Another possibility is that I think the you know, President Trump and the Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney are scheduled to meet today. There's been apparently kind of quiet discussions between the two kind of, you know, leaders and their kind of administrations, where there could be some announcement of at least a framework of kind of a trade deal, a security deal that would allow perhaps, you know, tariffs to come down. So anything along those lines, that directly, so okay, now progress is being made, you know, on different countries. I think that would be kind of welcome. The reverse is that, you know, over the course of 2 days, there could be escalation of tensions on trade matters, disagreements about things, you know, say between, you know, Trump and the European Union, as an example. There could be tensions over how to deal with, you know, the situation with Iran and Israel, you know, with some countries perhaps looking to, you know, try to pressure the, you know, the situation. That doesn't seem to be, like, there seems to be relative alignment in, so far with supporting Israel at this point in time among at least the G7 countries by and large. But dealing with Ukraine, that could again sort of create some tensions between the U.S. and you know, particularly the European partners. So it could kind of go either way. I think from the market's perspective, and I think for a lot of participants of other countries, leaders, that they would think as long if we walk out of this with a status quo, things aren't worse. That would be sort of a win as opposed to, you know, Trump's kind of escalating things in certain ways or being disruptive. In 2018, the last time there was a G7 meeting in Canada, they were trying to get alignment sort of on a communique, and that did not sort of go well. Then when President Trump was leaving on the plane, I think, you know, there was a statement that went out that he subsequently was unhappy with. So there was clearly, you know, a risk that things could go kind of off the rails. So these are things that I would watch for, signs of positive developments. I think it would be welcomed by the markets as we as they certainly focus on our deals being developed and frameworks being outlined in anticipation of July 8th, because that's when the 90-day reprieve expires. So things like that, but also any concerns of disagreement or things that would lead to perhaps antagonizing either side that would delay the possibility of deals.
Well, some interesting historical precedent to be mindful of. We'll see what the next couple of days deliver. I mentioned the FOMC meeting taking place this week as well. Will conclude on Wednesday. Heading into the meeting, appears that the Fed will be holding steady. What are you watching for, Jason, as takeaways this week?
Well, it is the third topic we're talking about this morning. That kind of reflects the overall kind of ranking in terms of relevance for the markets. Given sort of the economic data holding up reasonably well, inflation data is improving. It's sort of been better than expected, but given the tariff sort of, you know, minor tsunami that should hit with in terms of inflation, the Fed would certainly kind of look through the recent data and worry about, well, inflation is likely to rise near term. So they have justification for standing pat, for saying the economy is still in a relatively decent place. They're closely monitoring the, you know, the situation, which is why the market probability for a cut this week is at 3 basis points. So basically, you know, zero. Still a little bit under 25% chance for July. Only once you get to September are you now up to kind of the 80% range. Then it's still, the market's still pricing for 2 full cuts this year. So no action right now, but still the Fed beginning to cut by the end of the summer, the end of the third quarter, 2 cuts this year. So what then to watch for if there's no actual cuts? It is change in the Fed's kind of guidance regarding the state of the economy through the summary of economic projections, or the dot plot and whether that changes. On the dot plot, at the last update of the, back in March. The median dot implied two cuts this year, and the tilt was more towards being even less than that. So there's definitely a risk or a possibility that the shift goes to like a median of only one cut this year. That will be contingent on what ultimately is reflected by kind of the economic projections. When they last did this in mid-March, it was they would have been making some assumptions about what tariffs would be, what that would mean for inflation, what that would mean for growth. What we got on Liberation Day was certainly much higher than that, but we've also seen kind of a walking back. And there is a trend towards sort of de-escalation, and they may have some information by Wednesday, what happens out of the G7, whether there's some sort of progress on trade deals that could also bring tariffs down. So it's kind of an open question of how much at least different committee members would sort of update their expectations for tariffs. That would be mean inflation goes higher and growth goes lower, all else equal relative to where we are in March. And that could impact, you know, where the median dot goes. Given that, you know, in the next few weeks, we could get deals that further de-escalate the situation on trade. It, you know, that could certainly change the Fed's thinking just in the matter of, you know, the next 6 weeks before they meet in July. So that's what the markets will focus on. But given the situation is so fluid from both the economic data and the policy outcomes, I think that even if they were to shift a slightly more hawkish stance, a little bit negative in the near term for the markets, but I think ultimately, you know, people would kind of look through it given where the data is coming out.
So there's a lot outstanding at the moment when you consider what you've covered for us this morning, Jason, accounting for geopolitical and policy risk factors. What should investors be doing right now to navigate this all?
Well, let's kind of think about where we've been, where we're likely to go. It's been a rapid recovery from the lows in early April with the S&P up back over 6,000, back to a level that was just, kind of where it was prior to President Trump being inaugurated. Right. So back kind of, you know, in positive territory there. So very rapid recovery at a time when there's still also a lot of uncertainty on various policy matters, political matters. We haven't even touched on the prospects for the one big, beautiful bill that will get some news probably out of a Senate Finance Committee this week and, you know, the markup. So that is also kind of progressing and what kind of changes could take place there. So a period of consolidation in the equity markets is certainly sort of, you know, understandable for the time being. But stepping back big picture, we think we're still in a kind of a bull market. So on a 12-month horizon, still see, you know, decent upside, close to 10%. But over the course of the summer, certainly could see some choppiness. Both the possibility of the markets kind of melting up a little bit if we get progress on the, you know, early July, a budget deal is passed, trade deals are announced. At the same time, I think the markets are somewhat complacent on the economic impact of tariffs, and we can certainly get a bit of a soft patch in the data, the markets could sell off. So I think that's kind of the reality that we're kind of dealing with in the near term. Given that sort of uncertain environment, that's one of the reasons why we continue like the tech sector. It's more sort of secularly based, and it certainly has been done quite well of late. The topic of U.S. exceptionalism, I think, is kind of relevant given sort of what we talked about earlier regarding how the dollar, you know, kind of modestly rallied on Friday. U.S. rates actually went higher, so they didn't really get that kind of safe haven bid. When we think about U.S. exceptionalism, there's a, you know, this is a probably a bigger conversation for another time, but sure, there's a lot of ways to kind of think about it. But one of it is that I think, you know, U.S. or corporate America still continues to perform rather sort of exceptionally well, and certainly the mega cap tech companies. The public sector, the finances of the country are certainly more challenged. It's a little bit more unexceptional, I guess you could say it that way. If that's the case, that's a more of an impact for the overall state of the economy. The asset classes that are most macro-based are the dollar and rates. They're really macro asset classes versus equities that are more going to be micro-based. You're seeing then, you know, the equity markets do well because, again, U.S. exceptionalism at the corporate sector is holding up. At the macro, you know, level, rates going kind of higher, or the dollar weakening, that's kind of reflective of kind of more the broader economic concerns and policy concerns in the U.S. Those are likely to persist. All of this is said, you know, the dollar is likely to weaken. So when we think about kind of asset allocation kind of across regions, if the dollar does weaken, if you have foreign investments, that's actually, it ends up being a tailwind for investments abroad. So thinking about these different factors, it's also why, even though we like U.S. equities, having making sure you have kind of a globally diversified portfolio, given these sort of, you know, conflicting kind of, you know, forces and factors all playing out. And the last thing is just on rates. You know, rates could go higher. The fact that they're actually kind of rallying again is, even in an environment where there's this uncertainty, is consistent with perhaps at the back end of the curve in particular being driven more by policy and politics and geopolitics than it is about sort of necessarily the, you know, fundamentals. That's more reflective by the 2-year, the 5-year. And we feel that's where we have more conviction in terms of making calls and where we would kind of allocate. And finally, just gold continues to be kind of a good diversifier in this geopolitical environment. And so that's something we continue to like and see, at least as a hedge, a good role for that in portfolios right now.
Jason, thank you very much for hitting on those positioning considerations as we talked about a lot going on many fronts at the moment. So very helpful to have this guidance and context to begin the trading week. Thank you again for joining us, Jason.
You're welcome. Have a great week.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.